picture this. You're on downwind, abeam the numbers, everything set up for a normal approach. Your examiner reaches over, pulls the throttle to idle, folds their arms and says two words, "Your engine." Most students have done engine out drills. They know the flow. Best glide speed, pick a field, run the checklist. Aviate, navigate, communicate. That training matters and it's good instinct in a genuine emergency, but there's a specific task on your private pilot check ride called the Power Off 180, and it is not just an engine out drill, it is a precision maneuver with a defined start point, a defined standard, and a spot on the runway you're expected to hit. A lot of candidates don't realize that until the examiner explains it during the briefing. Some don't realize it until they've already missed the mark. I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today we are walking through the Power Off 180 from the beginning, what it is, how it's graded, where students go wrong, and what you can do in the pattern this week to get sharper at it before you sit across from that examiner. Before we get into it, a quick word. Shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial? They've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. All right, back to downwind. The Power Off 180 lives in area of Operation 7 of the Private Pilot Airman Certification Standards, or ACS. That's the section on emergency operations. It sits alongside emergency descent, engine failure during takeoff, and systems and equipment malfunctions. So it's framed as emergency training. And it is. But the examiner is not just watching to see whether you survive. They're watching to see whether you can fly with precision under pressure. Here's the setup. You're on the downwind leg of the traffic pattern, abeam the landing threshold. Your examiner cuts the power to idle and leaves it there. You will not get that power back. Your job is to complete a 180-degree turn from that point, transition through base, roll out on final, and touch down within 200 feet beyond a designated point on the runway. The examiner will identify that point before you fly the maneuver. Could be the numbers, could be a specific touchdown zone marker. But you know where you're supposed to land, and the ACS says you need to get there no more than 200 feet past it, and not before it. You also need to maintain aircraft control throughout. No excessive bank angles. No diving turns to make up for lost altitude. No ballooning through the flare. And ideally, you stick the landing like you meant every inch of it. 200 feet sounds like a lot of margin in practice. It is not. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The Power Off 180 is fundamentally an energy management problem. You start with a fixed amount of energy at a fixed point in space. You have no throttle. Every decision you make from that moment forward either preserves energy or bleeds it away. Your job is to arrive at the runway threshold with exactly the right amount. Not too much, not too little, too much energy, and you float. You sail past your designated point, and the examiner marks a task failure. Too little energy, and you're low and diving on final, which is both a task failure and, in a real emergency, genuinely dangerous. Neither outcome is what anyone wants. So how do you manage that energy? Let's walk through this together. The moment that throttle goes to idle, you need two things immediately. You need to establish best glide speed, and you need to start turning toward the runway. Best glide is different for every airplane. And you need to know yours cold before you get in that airplane for the check ride. In a Cessna 172, it's 68 knots. In a Piper Cherokee, it's 73. Check your pilot's operating handbook and commit that number to memory. Whatever your number is, get there fast and hold it precisely. Here's where students make the first critical mistake. They stay on downwind too long. They run the emergency checklist. They scan for alternate landing areas. All of that instinct comes from engine out emergency training, and it is the right instinct when you're over a cornfield at 2,000 feet with nowhere obvious to go. But in this maneuver, with a runway right behind you, the most important physical action in the first few seconds is starting the turn toward that runway. Every second you spend flying away from it is altitude you cannot buy back. Once it's gone, it's gone. Once you're turning, you need to manage your pattern geometry. This is the heart of the maneuver. You started to beam the numbers roughly 1 to 1.5 miles from the threshold, depending on the pattern altitude at your airport. You need to cover that distance with the altitude you have while bleeding off exactly the right amount of energy to arrive on speed at the threshold. The best mental tool I've found for this maneuver is the constant angle aiming point. Pick a spot about 300 feet past the threshold, slightly short of where you would normally touch down. That is your reference. Stare at it. If that point is stationary in your windscreen, you're on a constant glide path to hit it. If it's rising in your view, you're going to land short. If it's dropping toward the bottom of the windscreen, you're going to float past it. This works because it's pure geometry. A point that holds still relative to your windscreen means you and that point are on a collision course. The airplane doesn't know it's an emergency. The physics don't care. Use the physics. Now, let's talk about wind, because this is where a lot of candidates get tripped up in ways they didn't anticipate. A calm wind power off 180 is manageable. Add any kind of crosswind or headwind component, and the problem changes shape. If you have a headwind on final, which is normally what you want when you're landing, that same wind is working against your ground speed on the base leg, you are flying through an air mass that is pushing you away from the runway, your ground track from downwind to final is not a neat rectangle. The wind is pulling at your position the entire time. Students who don't account for this end up in one of two places. If they ignore a headwind on final, they find themselves low and slow at the threshold, diving to make the numbers, which is exactly the kind of control input that contributes to the loss of control accident statistics the Federal Aviation Administration publishes every year. If they ignore a tailwind on base, they get blown through the final approach course, overshoot the turn, and end up high and fast with nowhere to go. The fix is simple, but it requires you to think about wind before the maneuver starts. Know which way it's blowing. Think through how it affects each leg before your examiner cuts the power. When you brief the maneuver, build a quick mental picture of the wind adjustment you'll need. A stronger headwind on final means you can fly a tighter base, because your glide over the ground will be compressed. A calmer day means you need the full width of the pattern to lose enough altitude. Now, let's talk about flaps, because they are part of this energy equation, and students get this wrong more often than almost anything else in the maneuver. Flaps create drag. Drag costs energy. That is useful when you have too much altitude and need to come down. It is a trap when you have too little. The most common mistake I see is students dropping full flaps turning base. They think flaps mean safety, slower speed, better visibility, shorter landing roll, all true in the right moment. But if you deploy full flaps on base and then realize you're low, you cannot undo that decision. The drag is there. You've burned the energy. The only adjustment left is airspeed, and if you pull the nose up to stretch the glide, you are trading the speed you need to fly for altitude you can't sustain. That is how a power-off approach becomes something worse. The right approach is to stage your flaps. Hold off until you're established on final and you're confident the runway is made. Once you know you're going to reach the threshold, use flaps to fine-tune. If you're high, a notch of flaps bleeds altitude cleanly. If you're on glide path, you're in control of exactly how much drag you introduce and when. Some instructors teach what's called the high key and low key method, which comes from military emergency approach training. High key is the moment you're abeam the numbers, the start of the maneuver. Low key is a checkpoint roughly halfway through the base turn where you read your altitude and make a judgment call. Are you where you expect to be? Do you need to tighten the pattern or extend it slightly? Do you have margin to add flaps, or should you hold off? You don't have to use those exact terms, but having a structured position check partway through the maneuver helps you catch problems early, while you still have altitude and options. Students who don't check until they roll out on final find themselves reacting to a problem they could have solved a quarter mile ago. The ACS also specifically addresses directional control and coordination throughout the maneuver. This is not a throwaway line. Steep, impulsive bank angles on base to final do two things that hurt you. They increase load factor, which increases your stall speed at a moment when your airspeed is already lower than cruise, and they reduce your glide efficiency, which means you lose more altitude per unit of distance than you would in a coordinated moderate bank turn. The instinct to yank the airplane around when the runway is coming up fast is understandable. It is also dangerous. Controlled, coordinated turns at a bank angle you can sustain. That is the standard the examiner is watching for, and it is also the standard that keeps the airplane flying. Let's talk about what happens inside the oral portion of the checkride, because the power-off 180 gets addressed there too. Examiners often ask about the maneuver before you ever get in the airplane. They want to know that you understand the purpose, not just the mechanics. Be ready to explain energy management. Be ready to explain why you stage your flaps instead of dumping them all at once. Be ready to describe what you would do if you realized halfway through the base turn that you were too high. The answer is not add power. There isn't any. The answer is a slip, flaps, or both, and you should be able to say that clearly and quickly. Some examiners will also ask you what you would do if you were clearly not going to make the runway. What does that decision process look like? In the context of a simulated emergency, the honest answer is that you would pick the best available landing area. In the context of the flight, your examiner will have briefed you on how they want to handle that scenario before you took off. Know that briefing, know what you agreed to. Now, practical tips. How do you actually get better at this before your checkride pattern work? Specifically, pattern work where you practice from the abeam position at idle. On a quiet day with your certified flight instructor in the right seat, ask to fly a series of approaches where every landing is a power-off approach from the abeam position. No engine, just the airplane and the runway. You will discover quickly what your airplane does, how much altitude it burns from abeam to the threshold, how different a 10-knot headwind feels on base versus a calm day, what high looks like versus right. Your first few attempts will probably be rough, and that is fine. The goal is reps and feedback. Some students find it useful to call checkpoints out loud on each leg. Abeam, the numbers on downwind, 1,000 above field elevation. Turning base, 700, established on final, 400. The exact numbers vary by airport and airplane, but building a consistent sense of where you should be at each point lets you catch deviations early, before they become unfixable. After 3 or 4 sessions of this, you will start to develop something that no ground lesson can give you. Intuition about the energy state of the airplane. You will start to feel the difference between a glide path that's going to make the runway and one that isn't. That intuition is what you want walking into your checkride. One last thought worth saying out loud. The Power Off 180 teaches you something that carries way past the checkride. It teaches you that every approach has an energy budget, and your job as the pilot is to manage it. Every normal landing you fly after that checkride, you're doing this same calculation, just with the luxury of a throttle to bail you out when you get it wrong. When you take that throttle away in practice, you learn what the airplane is actually doing underneath all the noise and all the corrections. It makes you sharper every time you touch a runway. The pilots who can fly smooth, confident power-off approaches are not just good at emergency procedures, they are good at landings. Full stop, because they understand where the energy is. Sources for this segment come from the Private Pilot Airman Certification Standards and the Airplane Flying Handbook, both published by the FAA, and from Chapter 8 of the handbook specifically, which covers approaches and landings in detail. You can find traffic pattern at radiohangar.com. Fly the approach, hit your spot.